The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International and Music for All.
Hi, everyone. It's Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts and the host of the Marching Roundtable podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Scotty Basham is the principal of the Lavoy Exceptional Center in Hillsborough County, Florida, where I live, which provides education and support for students aged kindergarten to 22 with a wide range of disabilities. Scotty and her team do really exceptional work, and I think you're going to love this conversation. I think you'll find it very inspiring and informative. I asked her to speak with me about combating ableism in our music programs. You can see the video version of this on the Marching Roundtable YouTube channel. We'd like to thank Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com, for sponsoring this podcast. I hope you enjoy it.
It became, when I stepped into the world of education, I don't know, however long ago, I began teaching as a special education teacher, but it really wasn't until I had personal experience with like losing my hearing and some other things that kind of changed my perspective on how impactful it is for people who might have something outside the norm, which is really the majority of society. It's really all of us, but for whatever reason, we don't tend to think of it that way. And so that's in essence what ableism is. Ableism is kind of the belief that has become normalized that the norm, whatever that is better than any type of deficit. So it's better to walk than it is to be in a wheelchair. It's better to not have to use glasses. So being able to see without glasses is better than having to wear glasses. So any type of like disability would be seen as, less than, not as good, not versus being seen as a strength, or like, that's one thing that's so cool. Like I had not heard of, an adaptive clarinet, someone being, able to do that. And I think that's extraordinary. Like that to me, like, why not? Like, I think of like, why didn't someone
But what's amazing to me is like, she was an excellent clarinetist, but then the idea that you could have the patience and extra, like the extra skill involved to use two different parts of your hand to play, like, to me, it's just the most astounding accomplishment. So certainly creating the instrument is an astounding accomplishment. Then for her to be able to relearn and even relearn with some challenges because of the stroke and the way she was having to relearn so much, right? She was relearning almost everything. So like, it's so something to be so honored, but you're right, it's so easily discounted. So why do you feel like this is the case? I mean, I know how our culture works. I know how our society works, but like, why not honor people that are taking extra steps or overcome? Like, you know, we're past left-handed people now, right? Like are there people that think left-handed people are less than? I guess that's possible at this point still.
So, you know, I think that's what has confounded me with, the research for my doctorate. And so I would have originally said to you, my personal belief is, well, of course, like, why, of course we do that. Like, right. Of course. And just being very transparent, like even from myself as an educator, and even as a teacher, working with students with different types of, different learning, ways that we needed to adapt their learning. Even that is my background. When I started really looking at the research historically and then really looking at what is happening in education still, The truth is, you know, based on the research, that we don't. And we can see that based on the decisions that are made over and over again in education. So example of that, like we have education and we have special education rather than just education, right?
Right.
If we had education for all, whatever that meant, then we wouldn't need this dualistic approach to educating young people. But that's not the way, education came to be, right? When we look at like only certain people have ever been allowed to be educated. Only certain people still have access to certain things. And of course, you know, that's been exacerbated with like race, certainly sex, gender, disability, like you name it. And even more so now, I think, just in the broader context of society, we're even more polarized, I think. So like my personal opinion, polarized now than, you know, perhaps, I don't know, 15 years ago. And 15 years ago, we weren't in a good place either, you know.
There's a lot of theories about why that is. Certainly social media and media in general and unscrupulous leaders have used this all to their advantage. And then we've all sort of followed along. So like I'm sitting here, I have to be honest. When I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if I was in a class and we all went to shop class, like I am so bad with tools. I'm a terror with a hammer. And you don't want to get me near a saw, right? So like I would need to be in the way that we categorize things. I would need to be in like special shop class because I would be one of those people. I do not have that aptitude. Now, somebody else can't compose music and I can. So I've understood in my life, I have strengths. I have things I'm not good at. And thank goodness, I know people that are great at making things. And, my husband is the one that fixes stuff around the house. I don't even try, you know, like, I mean, I'm doing other things. So are there people that are going to be like shunning me because I'm horrible with tools? Probably. I mean, there are people that would mock me for that.
No.
Right? But isn't that the way the world works? We all have strengths and we all have things we're just not good at.
Right. And I absolutely, I think we do. And I think that's a difference of looking at things through like a strengths-based approach. Like, what are we good at? Let's find what we're good at and use that to then become better at different things, right? Like, I am not I have always struggled with math. It is not something it's like Greek to me. And I did what I did the bare minimum to get through school. But I think the difference when we start looking at things like what we would consider special education, you know, these are things it is the law, it is federal law. and the reason it is federal law when we have a student's like with developing a student's educational plan, the reason it's federal law is because historically students were denied. They weren't, you're not even allowed to come to school. Like with segregation, it's federal law. So the difference, I think, because we have this whole portion of society that was not allowed, that we have to then, as a society, we develop laws that now come in and say, you have to do X, Y, Z. And it's sad that we have to do that, because really, if we just took a step back, like you just said, and well, why wouldn't we want to celebrate things that people are good at? Why wouldn't we want to, I might have to go and learn math, And I've got to do what I got to do, but I'm really good at this, you know, creative thinking or language arts or whatever that is, writing or computers or I don't, whatever. But we don't
running a school for special learners in such an, I mean, you're doing such amazingly creative things. You keep the attitude and the whole tone of the buildings. My impression is incredibly positive and encouraging. And like, Scotty, that's a talent. That's a special gift.
Oh, I totally believe that. But I, you know, my view, not even just my view of education, but my view of just people and human nature shifted when I became the principal at an exceptional center. And it's not that I didn't value individuality before. I don't think I understood it the way I understand it now. I think like ingrained in me was, you know, of course, you know, I want to celebrate people. I want to be accepting of everyone. But for me, this is different. And so when I think of like the professor with the adaptive clarinet, or when I think of a student marching in a marching band show that is visually impaired, a student with a significant learning disability that might have some processing issues, either with like reading music or even like reading drill sets. When I think about those things, I think before I might have been more critical of like, this person doesn't have the skill set for that. Versus now what I do and what I get to do every day is look at a student, just from where they are as a human being. And we get to look at how we're going to open the world for them. And not that their world is not already open, but it's really how we then are going to understand them, not how they understand the world, because they already understand their world. But how we can access things for them or have us understand them better, versus where I think I would have categorized that before, that it was the student's responsibility to understand that. I totally see it as my responsibility to understand them. And, you know, that I'm more of a learner than I am, you know, an educator, right? Like, and not that I'm not an educator, but like, I just see my role as, you know, I got to listen, you know, because sometimes it's the small things that allow us to kind of then find an entry point.
That's so interesting to me.
And I didn't think that way before. And even though, like, Greg and I talk about this, Greg and I, there's a, when we were both at, in Virginia, we were both at EC Glass and he was the band director. And I worked with the guard, and there was a young lady, and I'm going to tell you, I think about this young lady all the time. She could stand still and spin like nobody's business. But the moment we tried to have her move to a drill set, the processing that it took, and that is very complex. She couldn't remember one drill set after another, no matter what we did. Like I one day I had a bunch of folders with me, and I happened to take out a whole bunch of colors, and I was like, hey, let's try this. And we just ended up putting we created a rainbow all over the field, and she learned how to march her drill sets by going from color to color, rather than number to number or four steps or eight step interval or whatever. It was color to color. And so,
wow.
And through the whole year, she would go, you know, I would be on the front sidelines. And if she had trouble remembering, we'd be like, one of us, red, yellow, purple. And, it, you know, that's a student I probably would have moved along.
Right. Well, see, this is one of the things we're going to talk about on this upcoming webinar, because it's, you know, product-based music education versus social-based music education. And directors of all types are in such pressure for it to be perfect and everybody to look exactly the same. And so there comes a time when you're thinking like, okay, well, this person just can't be involved because they can't do X, Y, Z. And that has to be the case. And I think, I love that we're sort of like, people are saying like, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe there's, because I think we've gotten to the point where, and especially in modern show design, was we can be really creative and we can take a lot of liberties. And I love that guard member could, she somehow, her brain was like, I know where red is. I know, like, that was the, you found a bridge to help that marcher. Which,
that to me is extraordinary.
For her and for you.
Yeah. I can see the other side though, right? Like I can see that, you know, as a band director or, you know, certainly, you know, was it color guard, winter guard, you know, dance. I totally understand the precision. I get all that, you know. And I understand the need for that, you know. But I think sometimes, you know, we are our own worst enemies. And we think it has to be one way because that's the way it's always been before. And what always confounds me with that is I really think that, you know, band directors, anybody that deals in music or choreography, or it's such a creative, some of the most creative people on the planet. And like, I kind of go, really? Like we can't find a way, even if it's maybe not 100% of the time, or maybe it's not every, you know, yeah, maybe they aren't, you know, running a, you know, jazz running across the field, playing their, you know, whatever. Maybe that is not something for them, but
that doesn't mean they can't be in the show.
It doesn't mean they can't be a participant, because I think a lot of times as adults, we kind of step back and we look at, you know, maybe the person that is, has a different ability, and we go, well, let's see if we can open the door for them. But not necessarily thinking about what it also does for everybody else around them. You know, and I think about like, I use myself a lot as an example. Like, I really am the adults on, you know, that I get to work with every day. We're learners. We are in the kids' world. Most of my students have, they're somewhere on the autism spectrum, not all of them, but, and so they interact with the world differently. I'm a visitor, 100% a visitor. I'm along for the ride. and it's really magical. Like we get so excited over some of the silliest things, but my students have just taught me, you know, there's a million different ways to look at any particular thing. And to me, that's a huge gift. I just think of that, and that, that's a gift for me. I mean, I hope I provide something for them, you know, over the course of their lives, like, you know, but,
Well, I mean, I think just having an environment where you're kind and you're paying attention and you're trying to understand them and, you know, do good for them, that to me is a gift unto itself. So can you give me an example? You just sort of said this in passing. Can you give an example of one of those things that you said was silly that you guys get excited about? Can you think of any?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, you know, you might have to stop me here. because for someone else, it might not even be, be anything that you would like even like celebrate, you know? Today I was in an IEP meeting for a young man who's in elementary school, and he's in first grade, so he's very young, and he has a diagnosis of the autism spectrum, and he's nonverbal, and so there's been a lot of working with from our perspective of how to open up communication for him. So how do we communicate? How does he communicate? You know, so when he first came to us, there was a lot of, you know, we were introducing him to things like a classroom. Like, so this is what a classroom is. This is what a door is. This is what a seat is. And that's not done through, you know, through us talking to him. It's through, you know, examples and, visuals. And, so today, you know, he's been with us, he's about 6 months. And so today we were, I was sitting with the young man's parents and, his amazing teacher and a couple of other professionals that work with him every day. And we were sharing that the student now is pointing to, we use visuals. So we've introduced four visuals for him. So it's go, there's a picture of, you know, what we use arrows sometimes to do go. There's a go, there's a bathroom, there's yes, there's no. And so he had no functional communication before he came to us. He's now using the visuals to communicate with us. So he understands what the visual means and what the cause and effect is of the visual, which is, so he has four pieces of functional communication. And, just recently he's started to verbalize the word go and, wow, touch the visual that would be go. And so I have goosebumps thinking about it, because like over the course of that young man's life and his family's life, being able to communicate just simply, I can't even imagine that. I can't even imagine not being able to share my wants, needs, my happy times, or like people understand while I'm mad. Like so that's, he's gaining that. Like he's gaining the ability to be able to communicate. And it's not through us forcing him to speak, you know, that may,
he's just going there. It strikes me as like the first step on the moon.
Yeah. It's
seriously, like so transformative for him and his whole family. And you guys helped him do that. That's something to celebrate and be very proud of, no doubt.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. And then like I have a student who previously has not been able to be around other peers. He's spent a lot of time isolated as we've worked him through some of his significant behavior. But, you know, he's now, and he was only at school. So he was what's considered, he was on a modified day. So he was only there like a few hours. He's now there. He's at school all day and in a classroom with students, in the lunchroom with students. He's going on field trips with his peers. And so like, I think about that and, you know, that's through, our teachers, listening to him, and, he's nonverbal as well. But picking up on his social cues and how he communicates, been able to, figure out a way to kind of work together.
That's a great, great example. So this may be a completely inappropriate comparison, But
Go
it
ahead.
does remind me of, as a band director, having that unbelievably awkward ninth grade boy who can't march, can't really control himself, can't even get in time, like doesn't have that inherent march on the beat thing. And then at the end of the season, or maybe the end of the next season, he's one of our best marchers and he's figured it all out. And, you know, 2 years later, he's band captain. Like, there's a lot of those stories. So it's, we all know not to give up on kids, and who knows how they develop and when it clicks. And we've all been in the classroom and suddenly you see the light bulb.
Yep.
This is why we want to be teachers, right? So it's on all different levels. Now you're working at a level that I can't even imagine. I think it's
it
so
is.
Amazing. But the point is, this is applicable to all of our classrooms, because we've all had those students that somehow it didn't really click until one day it did. And thank goodness we didn't
Yes.
send them
And
away.
I think one of the greatest gifts that has come to me since I became the principal at this school is I've heard so much around presuming competency. This for me, like when I, it's such an, it's not rocket science, but like in the world of disability, it's pretty common language that, you know, we need to presume competence. It's not, for me, it's not just students in special education, right? It's for all people. Let's presume competence. Let's presume that students have the ability. Let's presume that students, can do. We may need to create the pathway or help them with the pathway to get there.
Oh, I get it.
But what happens a lot, I think, just across, and this is not just in any one area, but I think what we say a lot is, no, that student can't do that. That student can't do it. They don't have the ability to do it. They may not have the ability yet. And yeah, we may not, you know, if a student's just starting out, you know, they're not going to, they don't have the skill set to be able to, if you're starting out running, you can't start out running and run a marathon, right?
Right.
So,
right.
But to say that this student, because they don't have the, the student can never run, well, that's not actually true. We may need to find a different way for them to access running. We may need them to run with somebody. We may need someone to pull them. But there are ways that we can, that student can absolutely run. And it sometimes it's about changing our definition of what run means. And I think about it all the time, like that's like this idea of what success means. Success doesn't have to mean one thing, right? Success can mean gold medal. It can mean state championship. And that's wonderful. But for some students, just stepping in the classroom, stepping in the band room, being at a Friday night football game, being able to sit amongst, a percussion section, being welcomed in as a peer once a week, is a way for them to engage. And I think that all stems back to this idea of presuming competence. Of course they can. We got to figure out how for them to do it and to do them safely, but yeah, Let's figure it out. Let's find a way.
Well, and I love this idea of what success is, because you're right. We have, like, maybe people think success is the concert is perfect and there's not a missed note and everything's in tune. And, you know, or is it, oh my gosh, 50 really excited students sitting together, making music, having a joyful experience, having a moment they'll remember the rest of their lives, learning a love of music they can carry with them throughout their whole lives. Is that not why I'm a music educator. You know what I mean? Is it about that superior rating, or is it about kids who are so excited to show up for my period, my class, and my class period?
Yeah. And I think
it
it's
makes
okay
us
for it.
think.
Yeah. And I think it's okay for it to be both. Like, I don't think you have to give up one for the other. But I think that has to be a choice. Like, you have to make that choice. A day on my campus that I absolutely love is my students love music. They engage with music differently than what I would engage with music. But that's for me, I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. Oh, what if we do turn that upside down? And that's awesome. Oh, what if we do? What if we take a drum? Oh yeah, it sounds differently in this room than it does over here. Like, let's try the drum now out, and let's try it out in five different rooms, and let's see how it sounds differently. We have my kids' drums is one of the things, and it probably has to do with some of the, like, the vibrations of the drums. But they all have the ability. Every student on my campus, no matter if they're wheelchair bound or some of my students are visually impaired. Some of them are deaf and hard of hearing. Some of them are very medically fragile and don't have the use of their arms or their legs. But every student somehow, some way, can interact with a drum. There's a million different ways for that to occur. But we have drum circles on our campus, and we have a couple. We have a someone who comes out and who does these amazing musical events, and they are an event. And I have never seen such sheer enthusiasm and unbridled, like, enthusiasm ever in my life. The kids love it, and they're excited, and they're smiling, and they're moving, and then when you look around at the adults' faces, you know, we're playing and we're doing, and but watching the students just being comfortable being who they are is awesome. And you know, music is for everybody. Everybody can interact with music somehow, some way, in some form.
Yeah, absolutely. And drums too are so primal. I met a whole group of ladies recently who do these drum circles, and you know, these are like older lady, you know, older women of a certain age, shall we say, right?
I love that.
Yeah, no, and they, I mean, it was so cool to me. Like, they just love to get together and do these drum circles, and they find it very spiritual and a way of really releasing. And we all have that experience. So you just described that with your special set of students too. It's, I mean, and anybody, I mean, come on, no matter where you are, if one of those great little drum lines comes marching down the street, we all start moving and we all start dancing and we all want to play.
Yes.
And like, this is a primal thing. So that's a very exciting story.
Yes. And we, you know, we do it quite frequently. And of course we have music on our campus every day. We have that as an elective for our students. So I even think, you know, I've actually had people say to me, I'm glad they ask questions, because that's how we learn, right? That's how people, maybe, you know, opens up someone else's world. But, you know, I've had people say to me, what, you know, your students have, you know, your students have music, you have music on your campus. And I'm like, oh yeah, we have music, we have art, we have PE, and we have agriculture. Once again, it's about presuming competence. You know, why wouldn't we? You know, like, so I think that's maybe kind of the mindset. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, you know, why wouldn't you include students in a Friday night football game or whatever,
right.
whatever
if
it is.
If you think of Carol Dweck, of course, in the fixed mindset versus the growth mindset, this is exactly the same thing you're saying, right? It's like, why not assume that they can? They just can't do it yet.
Yeah.
But if you have that fixed mindset and it's like, oh, that student just doesn't have the competency, too bad, student, move over here, you don't get to participate. Or let me challenge myself to be creative and find a way. You know that the clarinet professor that we were talking about earlier, she talks about music classrooms where there's a student who just sits in the front row and plays a triangle, and it's negligible to the impact of the music, but that student is so committed and they're involved and they're a member and they're at every single thing and they're with their friends, and like it's possible to find a way to include, right? And we can be creative and do that. So does this ableism then, to bring it back around, like that seems to me this is a part of our, unfortunately, our music education world, right? That we're talking about how do we get past that idea of looking down on someone who can't do the all the things we're imagining that perfect student might do, or that model student, shall I say?
So like, ableism is really the negative. So ableism is or someone that might make ableist assumptions about it's that I'll use myself because I wear a cochlear implant, that I don't have the same expertise as the principal sitting next to me, that person is going to be better at their job because they can hear. So it's already coming from the standpoint that I'm at a deficit, that I'm less than the person sitting next to me, versus no one's better or worse than the other person. We have different strengths, and we interact with the world differently. And there have been there are strengths that I didn't have before losing my hearing that I have now. And that in some cases makes me a better listener, maybe than the person next to me. Maybe not.
Well, no, the world is full of stories of people that have had challenges, and it has then made them better as a teacher, as an educator, as a person. I mean, there are myriad. Can you give me an example? Would you be, I don't want you to get too vulnerable here, but like, could you give me an example of something that you think you have grown into?
So for me,
Yes.
oh man. So I lost my hearing. I lost my hearing on my left side about 4 years. So it's been about 4 years. And I'm losing the hearing on my right side. So I have about 40% on my right. And now that I have my cochlear implant, when I don't have my implant on, I have zero hearing in my left. Because the nerve's been severed to put my implant. My implant, I don't have to wear all the time, so I can take the outside piece off, which is wonderful because I don't have to hear the stuff I don't want to hear. It has changed a lot the way that I take in sound, because when I have my cochlear and music is a really, I think for me, it was one of the hardest things for me to kind of, I don't know, maybe accept or get used to, because music sounds very different for me when I have my cochlear implant in. A lot of the sound that comes in is more, kind of like almost like computer generated. That's kind of what it sounds like. Because it's not my ear hearing it. It's the
Interesting.
nerve. Yeah. So it's more like electronic sort of, but I still have organic hearing on this ear. So I got really good when I was losing it at masking. I got really good at turning my head, because I still do that some. I got really good at reading lips, which has been a wonderful thing, because I can usually I'm pretty good if I can see people's lips. I can pretty much make out what they're saying as long as they're not talking too fast. That's
I can see
amazing.
that being very, very helpful as
No,
the school
that's amazing.
administrator.
But I think what it did, I mean, at first, it was difficult because it felt like I lost my hearing. And I actually started reading a book through my research, and it was about it's called Gaining Deafness. And rather than looking at something that I lost, flipping that for me and thinking about all these things that I gain as interacting with the world differently. So when I think of working with my students, a lot of them are nonverbal. A lot of language doesn't connect. So I have become much better at stepping back, looking, watching, and picking up on things that I just missed before. I didn't, you know, we say all the time on my campus that all behavior is communication, which it is. No matter what we do, the way we behave is communication. So, but I missed a lot of nonverbal or body language. Like I missed those other things because I was so, you know, I only took in with my hearing. And now I have to rely on my other senses, but I've become a much better, I've just become, you know, better at picking those things up, which I think makes me good at what I do.
No doubt.
You know,
I'm sorry.
No, I just say, I don't know that I would do, I mean, I feel like I do a good job. I don't know that I would feel like I did, would do as good of a job, knowing the way I did my job when I had my hearing.
Yeah, no, this is so interesting to me. I feel like our society in general is horrible at listening. And I feel like more and more people don't really pay attention to the world around them very much.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting to me that I can see how that journey you've been on would make you pay attention and be so much more perceptive, because I feel like people go around the world in a bubble these days, and they're not even aware that you're next to them in the grocery store or certainly in the next car, you know? So there's a message there too, but
yeah, I don't know. You know, I think one of the hardest things, and this has given me a true appreciation of my kids, and even my, you know, my family's, like, just what they might. I mean, I can't even imagine some of the challenges that they face each, you know, day. But you know, when I went from hearing to losing my hearing, gaining my deafness, however you want to look at it, I really was unbelievably, I think I was shocked. I mean, I was really shocked of people that I had worked with for years and knew me really, really well, colleagues, and the way they interacted with me. It was like I disappeared within, you know, within a day or 2 days, you know, and, you know, it wasn't, and that's just a lack of knowledge, and that's them being uncomfortable with how to navigate. But that in essence is ableism right there, that I became less than the moment I lost my hearing, versus becoming an asset in, you know, in a different way, or them looking at it in a different way. And we've come full force, because, you know, I'm not quiet. So, you know,
you fixed it. You talk to them. I understand that. So it strikes me also as being sort of like a lack of empathy in our, I feel like there's a lack of empathy in our society right now as well. People have a really hard time imagining themselves, putting themselves in someone else's shoes. And I feel like that is such an essential thing. And I feel like perhaps that might be one way, if I was standing in front of someone and I'm maybe that ableism is popping up in me and I'm thinking, oh, well, they can't, or I have to treat them a certain way, for me to stop and imagine, is that one possible step forward here, is to try to imagine in their, because you're doing that with your students. Like, how are they seeing the world? How are they communicating? You're having to be so perceptive.
Yeah. And I, when I even think of it, like with my kids, right? Like, a student who might have cognitive challenges, or a student, you know, on the spectrum, or might interact with the world differently. You know, a lot of times we take choices away from them because we think they don't have the ability to choose. And that's not true at all. So, you know, lunch is a very simple thing. Like, I think about that. Like, when I first got people were choosing kids' lunch for them. And wait a minute, you know, they can choose what they want to eat. And so we, you know, there's ways we have to do it, and maybe some visuals, and, but that's on us. That's on us. And so, you know, students being able to choose how they navigate or how they live in the world, right? Like, having the choice. Well, would you like to play a triangle, or would you like to play a drum? Whatever. Like, you know, okay, maybe they don't know. Well, let's try a triangle, then let's try a drum. Like, but we have to present that for them. We have to present it to them. If we don't give them a choice and we just make the decisions for them, we have, and this is true for any kid, like, we narrow their world, right? We narrow their ability to problem solve and critically think.
It's just like girls play these instruments, boys play these instruments. We're finally getting past that, you know. But that was just, I mean, one example. So if I'm a music teacher, I'm a music director, or band director, or whatever, and I'm trying to counter this. I'm trying to be aware of this. I'm trying to make my staff and my band family. So we've talked about some obvious things. So how do I talk about this? How do I have this conversation? How do I begin to make this better?
I think there are, I think there's a starting place, and I think the starting place is obviously with the person in charge, right? And I have never been a huge, you know, when people, you know, say to me, you know, or say to, you know, oh, you're doing such a great job. You know, I think a lot of us, you know, I mean, I know I point to, you know, my staff, they're the magic. Like, they're phenomenal. But the truth around it as well is that the leader sets the expectations for the group that they're in, right? Or the group that they're working with. And if the adults aren't accepting of any kind of difference, right? So rather than, like, I think, like, if they're not accepting and in their language choices, so things like, you know, well, no, we can't do this, we can't do that, he can't do that, she can't do that, whatever it is. So I think it starts with looking at kind of stepping back and looking how you're framing your program, right? Like, whatever that is. So, and what are the ways that you're willing to negotiate space for difference, and being able to articulate that, right? And like I said, I completely appreciating that I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think you can have this space, but then, you know, maybe, like I said, maybe it's like one after school rehearsal in 9 weeks where a student has the ability to start coming in and learning, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think if the adults aren't comfortable with whatever that is going to be, then it will not be successful no matter what you try and do. And then I think you have to bring in all your stakeholders. And that's not just the adults, but, you know, there's so much, there's a lot of polarization happening right now. You know, and, you know, students aren't, some students aren't as accepting. And, you know, there's a lot of, we have a lot of political stuff happening. And a lot of times students replicate what might be saying even outside of, you know, the school. Maybe they're bringing things in from, and not that those beliefs are good, bad, or indifferent, you know, that's not necessarily for me. I have my personal feelings, but I don't get to espouse my personal feelings while I'm standing in front of a group of kids. But what I can do is model the expectations that everybody matters. I can set my program or at least with the idea of that every student, everybody, not just student, everybody can learn. We learn at different rates. We learn with needing different ways. But if you don't believe that at its core, then this won't work. It won't work. And whether you believe it will or you won't, it'll because you'll either find creative ways or you won't.
Yeah. How easy would it be just, I mean, rather than, you know, let's not talk about why they can't.
Yeah. What can they do?
Let's figure out what they can, right? There is a way. And, you know, I love this idea of accepting everyone as they are and letting everybody be included. I can't imagine like that's just something that we do. This is what music programs do. Everybody gets to be involved, however they are. We find a way, right? If you're in a choir and somebody has a voice that doesn't quite fit in somewhere, we find a way to make them fit in, to help them fit in, right? There's 1,000 examples of this. But pointing out the difference and then being ableist about it, we can't accept that.
Yeah. And I think that's where it kind of comes down to is being able to step back and say, we're not going to accept that. You know, that is not reflective of the organization, of this organization. This is reflective of our organization. And, you know, I don't know how we can go wrong with that. You know, I don't know. And I think,
I think you're right. And I think that we do follow the lead of the person at the top. We do. And if I'm a band director and I'm in charge of my staff and I'm in the one overseeing everything, I can make that expectation. Everyone will be treated with dignity and included. Everybody will find a way for everybody to be involved and to be a part of what we're doing. Right. Like that's just part that's in our DNA as educators and as music educators.
Yeah. And I am always, and I this even makes me feel bad when I say, you know, I'm always amazed at like when I, you know, some days are rough at my school. There are some challenges, and that's true of education. I think we have great days and we have not so good days. And there are some really challenging days because I have some students with, I just have two students with really challenging behavior.
Yeah.
But they're amazing, you know, they're amazing and they're phenomenal human beings. And, you know, they're not lucky to have me. I'm lucky to have them. And I can't imagine doing anything else. Like I can't imagine. And I've been in gen ed and I can't imagine walking back into gen ed. But we like right now we find ways to partner with other schools. You know, we're finding ways to partner with our high school that's really close to us, or middle school that's really close to us. Because we have to presume competence, you know?
Well, I love what you just said. And that's why you're so amazingly great at what you do. I'm so happy that you are where you are doing what you're doing. It just brings me so much joy. And I love that you just described that even when it's really challenging and difficult and you've had a hard day, at the bottom line is you love it and you love your students. And this
Oh,
is
yeah.
where we all are, right? This is what we all have to remember, especially on those days that are harder. And if you bump up against somebody who is bringing that ableist mindset, and you have to just be able to step back and very calmly and kindly say, now, wait a minute. Let's do this another way, right? There's a way to do that with some kindness and calmness, and find a way to bring them around and let them see it from where you're looking, right? I think that gives me a lot of hope, and it makes the challenge seem more doable, because I'm not trying to solve the whole world. I'm trying to adjust one little thing at the time.
Yeah.
If we all did a little bit of that all the time, that would be a lot.
I know, you know, it's not, I do think it can feel overwhelming though, if you're trying to like,
yes,
you know, you have, a, if you're looking, you know, or, you know, might have a student that's, you know, nonverbal and, you know, maybe they have mobility issues and you have all of this, right? And you're like, you're thinking, oh, well, wait a minute, but what's, you know, there's small adjustments, you know, there's opening up worlds, and very, can start in small ways, and the kids will guide you. The kids will tell you all behaviors, communication. They'll tell you one way or another. We just have to listen, you know, they'll let us know.
Amazing. I love it. And we all just do a little bit, just start and include everybody. And listen, as you said, I'm going to end with this one thought. You said this really clearly earlier on, like, is there a more creative, resilient, smart, problem-solving group than all of us in the music educators? Like, we have solved every problem.
Yes.
From how to get a kid to toss a certain flag to how to get Johnny to play that. Like, we are problem solvers. And
yes,
we are creative. And we have I have fixed shows that were unfixable. And we have seen students be included in ways that we never would have imagined. So, like, I'm like, let's let that be our challenge, everybody. Like, we are smart and creative, and we have superpowers. Come on. We're putting on shows.
No,
We're
it's
putting a
true.
whole bunch of kids on the field. I always tell the band director, if they get through the first ball game of the year and haven't called an ambulance, that's a win. Okay. I mean, you know what I mean? You just gotta have context.
I know we have kids like playing upside down, spinning around, rolling. I don't,
exactly.
I mean, I,
look what we can do.
I know.
So can we not find a way to include a student who's coming from a little different place? Of course we can. And are we going to let our program have ableist tendencies? No, we're going to fix that. We're going to adjust all of those whenever we see it. Scotty, this has been the most enjoyable conversation.
I've had a great time.
I've loved it. And I appreciate, again, how vulnerable and honest you are in. And gosh, I love the work you're doing. I'm so happy that you're there. And I hope you realize the impact you're having on not just those students, but they're going home and their families are benefiting in untold ways. It's quite remarkable.
Well, I have told Greg many a time they're going to have to drag me out of there because I just.
I hope so. You need
I
to be there.
Just. You know, I do. I love it. And, you know, even on the hard days, I've never experienced anything like it in all the time I've been in education. Like it.
Well,
this,
and I love that you described that the own challenges that you've had with your hearing and otherwise have made you better and stronger in untold ways as well. I love that you shared that. And we all know that's true. So I'm going to inspire myself with those same thoughts as I go through my day. I like it. Thanks for talking to me.
No, thank you for having me. I'm going to send you a little clip of one of our drum circles.
I would love it.
I'm going to send you a clip because it's pretty, they're pretty, you'll enjoy it.
I will include that. Can I share that as part of this?
Yep. I'll share one that I have media releases in place for.
I love it. Okay, everybody, that's going to follow right now. Thank you, Scotty.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by FJM, Fred J. Miller Incorporated. FJM is the leader in marching arts uniform manufacturing and continues to lead the charge through groundbreaking design, superior service, and over 60 years of industry innovation. The Cesario collection of marching band uniforms is 100% machine washable, includes a limited lifetime warranty, and makes the fitting process a breeze with their adjust-a-cuff and adjust-a-hem technology. Now is the perfect time to create a new image for your program. Chat with a live FJM representative or schedule your complimentary consultation today at fjminc.com/roundtable. That's fjminc.com/roundtable. Fred J. Miller Incorporated, family owned and operated since 1960.